Christian Lord, guide my hand against your Roman popery!
And they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
We're on a mission from God.
Entitled, you want answers!
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth! Maybe we should chug on over to Mamby-Pamby Land, where maybe we can find some self-confidence for you, you jackwagon!
Coming to you live from his padded cell high atop Bethel Church, the most heralded, the most despised talk show in all of human history. This is the talk show Hell Hates. This is Pastor Mike Online.
And here we are, coming to you live from our top secret broadcasting bunker, right here at Area 52, and that is located at 1233 American Legion Drive, Festus, Missouri, 63028. But please don't tell anybody in the CIA or the Air Force. I'm tired of the black helicopters flying around all the time, trying to find us. Anyway, good to be with you again today. This is day two of the Pastor Mike Online Turkey Marathon. Yay! That was only a little loud. Hang on a second. Let's do that. Let's see how that works now. That's better. There we go. All right. Now we've made the last minute adjustments. Let's get right into it. Let's neither dilly nor dally. I am continuing what I started yesterday, and I can tell you that just in the articles that I've added since this morning, I'm not sure that I'm actually going to get any farther with the original program that I did yesterday when I got done. I used to sit around and just wait for something to pop up to talk about. When I first started doing The Watchmen, it took quite a while to find some of the stories that I thought were relevant, and that's 2009. And then people started sending me emails, and Pastor Mike, have you seen that? No, that's good, and I like that. And now the emails still come in, or people post things on social media or whatever, and I can't keep up. I literally cannot keep up with all of the technology news, all the genetic editing news, all of the things that are going on in churches. It's like an investigator trying to keep up with Hollywood sex scandals. They just keep pouring in over and over. Did you see Charlie Rose used to have his own show on PBS? And he was regarded by his peers and by, if you got to get on Charlie Rose, why, you had made it, okay? So then he joined CBS This Morning as their prime anchor person, and he is now, along with everybody else, they're pulling up stuff that he's been groping so-and-so, and he's been doing this, he's been suggesting this at the job site, and he's got women coming out all over the place. And my amazement is that the very crowd that wants to push a very liberal sexual agenda in this country are acting appalled at these evil men's behavior. Oh, it's terrible to treat people like that. But this is how most of those people live to begin with. They live from one bed to the other, sometimes in the same night. Sometimes, I won't go there. It's bad amongst the liberal people, Hollywood people, New York City media people, Washington, D.C. media people, and on and on and on. And they're acting like this comes out in the 1940s or something like that. Oh, they're appalled. But this is how these people live their life. You need to understand, that Bible is right. That Bible will tell you things about liars, about unsaved people. This is, if you want to know what lost people do, read Galatians 5. There's 18 works of the flesh there. If you want another list, go to Romans chapter 1. There's 23 in that list. And I promise you, wicked people who have no Jesus as their Savior, they do not believe the Bible, they don't go to a church anywhere, these people live this kind of lifestyle. And it's, you know, it's just floating to the surface now. And the truth of it is, while you have all these people who are acting appalled by it, some of those very same people are next on the list to be outed as some groper or some pervert or whatever it is. And I don't know, maybe it's just going to end up desensitizing everybody and we'll just accept that now as common. Well, you know, hey, he's a good news anchor. Did you hear what he did, you know, a couple of years ago, why he had to leave his last station? No. Oh, yeah, there was a big, you know, scandal with him and a bunch of ladies that worked there. And you're going, yeah, so? That means they do that all the time. What's the big deal? That's coming. That's coming. There's going to come a time when these people are going to be, are going to come out with this stuff. And everybody's going to go, I wonder how soybeans are doing in the market right now. People won't care anymore. Let me get into this. I knew it was coming. This sort of has something to do with the artificial intelligence and us creating a God. I've got quotes now that if you've got a seatbelt on your seat, strap it on so you don't fall out. But anyway, this story, we knew it was coming. We knew it was coming. And this now, the door's been opened. The camel's nose is under the tent. And what that means is, once the camel gets his nose under the tent, the rest of him's coming in. There's nothing to stop him now. Oakland, California, U.S. scientists try first gene editing in the human body. Bum, bum. Scientists for the first time have tried editing a gene inside the body in a bold attempt to permanently change a person's DNA to cure a disease. It's permanent, people. Now, I got a lot more to read here. But I got to say something. To every one of you who's telling people, well, you know, in the Tim LaHaye book, so-and-so it ended up with the mark of the beast, and he didn't want it. And, you know, he's afraid now that he can't be saved and go to heaven. And Tim LaHaye and Larry Jenkins wrote, or Jerry Jenkins, wrote this character that somebody, that he got the mark during the tribulation that the Bible never says last 7 years. And he gets this mark, and then he wakes up and says, I don't want that. That's bad. I want to... And then he's told, well, I wouldn't worry about it. God only looks on the inside of us. God doesn't judge the outward appearance. He only looks on the inside of us. And so even if you have the mark, you can still go to heaven. It's okay. Now, let me correct something. I'm going to correct a Bible. Yes, you heard it right. I'm going to correct a Bible. I am not going to correct the King James. I will let the King James correct the other Bibles. The other Bibles have it wrong. They are absolutely wrong concerning the location of the mark of the beast. The new translations say that people are going to receive a mark on their right hand or on their forehead. That's a lie. That is not true. I'll give you an example of how this works. Okay? Watch. This is a cracker. Right now, this cracker is on my mouth. See? It's on my mouth. And I'm not full. Now the cracker is in my mouth. See, it's a different location. It's a different territory. Now that it's in, it's going to stay there. My body's going to pull nutrients out of it. The rest of it's going to go to Sewerville. But that's the difference. The newer translations say on the right hand or on the forehead. Revelation 13, verse 16. He causeth all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, six things, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their forehead. Now, there's some people out there that's going to say, you know, if you knew original Greek, you know that that's not really correct. And it doesn't make a difference. It doesn't affect any doctrine. Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. The mark that is going to be, that people are going to voluntarily go get. They want this thing. Not because it makes them look pretty. It's not on their right hand. It's in their right hand. And it is in their forehead. That mark permanently changes them. It permanently initiates them. It permanently damns them to hell. Until hell's delivered over into the lake of fire. Then they're going to spend eternity in the lake of fire. Nobody, and I mean nobody, who receives the mark in their right hand or in their forehead, no one of these people are going to heaven. And I smell a rat. I smell a setup. I did a Watchmen video a couple years ago called New Translations and the Spirit of Antichrist. And it just kind of dawned on me that some of the significant changes, even some of the tiny changes that were made in these new Bibles do not, they don't speak of Christ like Daniel 3:25. Daniel 3:25, the fourth is like the Son of God. The new translations, a son of the gods. Okay? Not the same thing. And so the Savior in the NIV is a son of the gods, not the Son of God. That's important to know this, because that's who the Antichrist is, a son of the gods. Then you have like this, 2 Thessalonians 2. Then, let's see, how does it go? Does it, so, the man of sin, the son of perdition. That King James calls him the man of sin. Newer translations and private interpreters, they say he's the man of lawlessness. The Hebrew roots people love that interpretation of it. Because to them, that proves to everybody that if you're really saved, then you keep the law, the Old Testament. And if you have the spirit of Antichrist in you, you don't keep the law. Therefore, you are lawless, and you are the spirit of Antichrist, because he's the lawless one. That's not what it says. It says he's the man of sin. And the Bible never mentions a word about the Antichrist, the beast, breaking God's commandments. He changes them, but he doesn't do away with them. He seeks to change them, and God gives them into his hand, including times. And we'll get into that today. But what I'm getting at is, we just now opened the door to the permanent transformation of the human race this week. November 2017, this is where we are. The experiment was done Monday in California on a 44-year-old Brian Madieu. Or for those of you who live up north, it's Brian Maduix. Through an IV, he received billions of copies of corrective gene and a genetic tool to cut his DNA in a precise spot. That's CRISPR. It's kind of humbling to be the first to test this, said Maduix, who has a metabolic disease called Hunter syndrome. And the symptoms of that are he's always in the woods and he's always got a rifle and he's always, never mind. Thought that was, anyway. Madhu said, he said, I'm willing to take that risk. Hopefully it will help me and other people. Signs of whether it's working may come in a month. Tests will show for sure in 3 months. If it's successful, it could give a major boost to the fledgling field of gene therapy. Scientists have edited people's genes before, altering cells in the lab that are then returned to patients. They are also gene therapies that don't involve editing DNA. Now, let me say this. Some of you have asked me about, you know, what happens if I'm eating genetically modified food and it edits my DNA? Let me tell you something. There is nothing, and I mean absolutely nothing, as far as a consumable product that, even if it's itself is genetically modified, that when you eat it, it changes and alters your DNA in such a way as you now become a significantly different creature than the one your mother gave birth to. Let me tell you this. Out of the billions and billions and billions and billions of cells you have in your body, each one of them, or most of them, doing this thing where they unroll the DNA, they make a copy of it, put it in a new cell, and give each of the cells now the replacement strand. And it does that thousands of times every day with billions of cells in our bodies. Every now and then, one of those cells' DNA does not get transcribed right to the new cell. Every now and then that happens. It's natural. It's normal. It is a function of our body that it makes a mistake in editing or in copying the DNA to go from one cell to the other. Now, your body has a way of rejecting those cells where the DNA is not right. Your body has a way of getting rid of it. Your body has a way of changing it or correcting it, either turning it back to the way it should be or just destroying that cell because it's no good. Right? So eating genetically modified food, even if that piece of bread that you ate from the Wonder Bread Company and it said this was made using GMO products, it itself is not turning you into a beast. Okay? Because like I say, even if it is sun rays, too much sun can cause that type of thing to happen. If those cells continue to grow, they are canker, they are cancer. And at some point, they may, in fact, kill you. So what I'm telling you is, just because something's out there and you're afraid that if you eat it, it's going to change your DNA and you can't go to heaven after that, don't worry about that. That's nothing right now. Okay? Not anything you should worry about. If you don't want to eat GMO products, purely upon the fact that they messed around with God's plan for these animals and these grains and so on, man, I'm all with you as a form of protest. But we have to be realistic about it. What people are trying to get you to believe is that you are a born-again, Bible-believing Christian, sealed by the Holy Ghost of God unto the day of redemption, and God allow you unknowingly to eat a piece of bread that turns you into a monkey. That's what they want you to believe, okay? Don't, and a lot of these health food websites will fill your mind with fear. And for one reason, show me a health food website or a health natural living website that doesn't try to sell you stuff and run ads where other people try to sell you stuff. Show me one. So that kind of should make you think now about jumping on all of these health scare bandwagons. These people have products to sell. And if you're not scared out of your mind that what you got at the grocery store is going to kill you and send you to hell, then you won't buy their really expensive food, because it is more expensive than you can go down to Walmart or Kroger's or anywhere else and get cheap food. You have to pay three times as much for that. So I'm just telling you, be careful about falling into some of the lies that are put out there by the naturopathy people and the home health people and so on. And I'm not knocking that lifestyle. But don't believe some of the stuff they tell you. Don't believe, here I am, boy, I'm chasing this rabbit. Don't believe that you have natural healing energies in your body already. Show me that in the Bible. Show me that in the Bible. Because I've been told, I was told by people in a church conference, Pastor, do you take so-and-so and so-and-so dog root or whatever, you know, puppy chow, echinacea or whatever? Do you take these things? These are good for you. No, sometimes I take a lot of ibuprofen. Oh, no. If you take this root and you mix it with this flour and you stir it up in this rose oil and you do this 14 times a day, what that does, it releases your body's own healing energies and you won't have to have surgery. And I am not aware of anything in the Word of God that tells me that I have an energy locked up. And it's bound because I drink soda. And if I stop drinking soda and start taking all this stuff, then it's going to release my healing energies, and my disc will unbulge, and I won't need any surgery ever again, and everything will be fine. I don't believe that, and I don't think you should either, because it's not Bible. Okay, you want God to heal you? Ask God to heal you. You want God to give you a better living lifestyle, eating lifestyle? Ask God to help you with it. You want God to preserve your life? That's what God does for a living, is preserve people's lives. And it's better to trust in God with these things than to trust some of these New Age people like the Health Ranger. That guy is New Age to the core. Don't trust that guy. Anyway, back to the ranch here. All right. Let's see here. Let me finish reading this. This time the gene tinkering is happening in a precise way inside the body. It's like sending a mini surgeon along to place the new gene in exactly the right location. And if you're smart, you'll turn to Revelation 22 while I'm reading this. Dr. Sandy McRae says, we cut your DNA, open it up, insert a gene, stitch it back up, invisible mending. Done, just like that. All you do is lay down. We put an IV in you. We put these fluids in you that have corrected genes, that have modern NIV DNA. Okay? That's what we did. And what's going to happen is those cells are going to, they're going to get into your body. They are, in every sense of the word, your DNA, with the exception of the thing that we corrected. So we took your own DNA, we rewrote it, and we're putting it back in you. And within a matter of 3 to 6 months, every cell in your body will have been transformed. As any of the old cells dying off, the new cells that are there and replicating are going to replicate that new gene sequence. And it is permanent. Even if you father or give birth to a child after this has happened, your child then receives the DNA correction that you received 5 years ago. Now it's a whole new seed line that has never existed anywhere on this earth. That freaks me out, people. Freaks me out. We are now it is official. We are in the era of the transformation of human beings to something besides Adam. It's where we are. We cut your DNA, open it up, insert a gene, stitch it back up, invisible mending. She said it becomes part of your DNA and is there for the rest of your life. Life. That also means there's no going back. No way to erase any mistakes the editing might cause. I want you to think about this. I want you to think about this long and hard. We have DNA that was given to us by our Creator. God wrote it exactly how he wanted it. With all your things in your genes that you don't like. You got it from, I can see this in me, I got it from my dad, I can see this in me, I got it from my mom. All those things that you don't like, they're there. God put them there for a reason. It's his DNA. He wrote it. Man says, well, we don't trust that. We don't trust that. You should trust us, not your own DNA that God gave you. You should trust us. We're going to make a correction in there, and we're going to give that back to you, and it's permanent. Now, I mean, obviously there's a risk. We could have possibly made an error in it, but it's too bad because now it's permanent. So they're saying God got it wrong, so we corrected it, and stinks to be you if we're wrong. You know what that sounds like? That sounds like the Bible scholars. King James got it wrong. God got that Bible wrong. He did not preserve his word. He did not give us every single word in the from the original manuscripts. Those translated words are no good. You cannot trust them. You should trust what we, the changes that we make in your Bible, you should trust that and that alone. That's what they're telling you. And think about it. This idea of it being permanent. How many churches do you know of that have transitioned from the King James to modern translations? Thousands of them, right? How many Bibles that you know of, or how many churches that you know of, changed from using modern Bibles to only the King James? That's my point. There are none. It is such a rare happening that a pastor and a church congregation will get so under conviction about these Bibles they're using that they all had a meeting and they said, you know what? Let's get rid of these NIVs. Let's get rid of this Message Bible. Pastor, we'll help pay for it if you'll buy everybody in the church a big old fat King James Bible. I'm not aware of that happening. Once the change has been made in churches, it tends to be permanent. And then these churches offspring other churches, other campuses, and those little harlots are just like the mother harlot church that they came from. Dr. Eric Topol says this: you're really toying with nature, and the risk can't be fully known, but the studies should move forward because these are incurable diseases, said Dr. Eric Topol of Scripps Translational Science Institute. Protections are in place to help ensure safety, and animal tests were very encouraging, Dr. Howard Kaufman, a Boston scientist in the National Institutes of Health. He said gene editing's promise is too great to ignore. You're right, I'm not ignoring it. So far, there's been no evidence that this is going to be... Get ready. Now, these are the experts. So far, and we have a lot of experience with this because we did this to one person already. So far, there's been no evidence that this is going to be dangerous. Unquote. Now is not the time to get scared, he said. I disagree. There is no end to how much I disagree. I told you hang on here. I'm trying to type a word here. There we go. Yeah, look at that. Revelation 22. Revelation 22. I'm going to read you two passages. Revelation 22, 18. For I testify unto every man that heareth the words of the prophecy of this book, if any man shall add unto these things, God shall add unto him the plagues that are written in this book. I want you to listen to this. Doesn't that now make more sense than it ever did with you before? Because Jesus is telling us in no uncertain terms, if you add anything to the words of this book, then it's going to be manifested in your body. And I will add to you the plagues that are written in this book. So, you esteemed doctors, I'm going to tell you this. While you say that so far nothing about this proves to be dangerous in any way, shape, or form, you obviously have not read the Bible and know what it says. Let me finish it. And if any, verse 19, if any man shall take away from the words of the book of this prophecy, God shall take away his part out of the book of life. Think about it. The two things that Jesus said to not do with his book, both of them result in something going bad in your body. The first one, if you add to the words, then I'm going to add plagues to you. Changing your DNA by adding things, it's going to make you violently ill. Have you ever been so sick that in your sickness, you didn't care about living another hour? You ever been that sick?
Yeah.
Okay? And it's not you want to kill yourself or commit suicide. It's just that you're in such agony and so miserable, you just, God, take me home now, right? Plagues, diseases. And what's going to happen is for 5 months, everybody in the world is going to want to die, and they can't. Something happens when those locusts come out and sting those people. So they added to the words that God's going to add plagues. If they take away from the words, God takes away their name out of the book of what? Life. Both of these things are pointing to adding and subtracting from DNA. Not just the Bible here, but the Bible here in practically every cell in our body. Don't change that book. Where is that in the Old Testament, you say? Yes, Deuteronomy 4:2. Deuteronomy 4:2. You shall not add unto the word which I command you, neither shall you diminish aught from it, that you may keep the commandments of the Lord your God, which I command you. And then he says it again, Deuteronomy 12:32, what things soever I command you, observe to do it, thou shalt not add thereto, nor diminish from it. Now you have three times in your Bible, you're told not to add or take away from either the Bible or DNA. They've been doing it for years with cows and chickens and corn and barley and hops, where they make beer from. Okay, they've been doing that for years. Nobody thinks anything of it now. Now we're going to do it to human beings. And the experts want you to believe that it's not dangerous. I say not only is it dangerous to your body, it will permanently damage your eternal soul. People, don't do it. I'm begging you. You have a disease. You have things wrong in your body. You know how your grandmother dealt with it? She dealt with it. You know how our forefathers who had those same problems, where you got it from? They dealt with it. They handled it with the Word of God and with prayer. Science now wants you to handle it by turning yourself into something that God never intended. In fact, he specifically warned against it, and you did it anyway. So tell me, I'm going to throw this out. Do you really believe that this Bible's right? I do. So those of you who say, well, once you pray the salvation prayer, you don't have to do anything. You're still going to go to heaven. One guy, one Baptist preacher, Baptist, King James Baptist preacher, said, I believe I'm so eternally secure, I can take the mark of the beast and go to heaven. You know what? I dare you to go do it. Okay? I don't want you to, because I know the consequences of it. But, you know, you do whatever you think will work. And if you think that'll work, whatever. But I'm telling God's people, don't do it. God said don't do it. I don't think you ought to do it. If I'm wrong, God will whoop the fire out of me. But according to the Word of God, what I see here, no way. All right, so gene editing, we're there now. We're doing it, and they're going to continue to do it. Nothing's going to stop them. And at some point, I'll just tell you where it goes. At some point, where is that article I had? At some point, it's going to go from trial to voluntary to mandatory. Is what it's going to do. And when it becomes mandatory, it'll become mandatory by way of, yeah, here's what I'm looking for. It'll become mandatory by way of, let's see here. You want to be able to buy health insurance. Okay? And all of a sudden now, they cancel you because you don't have your DNA changed. They're not going to cover you. They're going to give you life insurance, not going to give you health insurance. They're going to close out your bank account. IRS is going to come get all your money because you won't comply with the new standards. You won't comply with it. So, I think, and here's something God showed me a long time ago when it comes to being a watchman on the wall. If I see the sword coming, and let's say they're 50 miles away, I can see a big cloud of dust being kicked up, and I know that they're not coming for my birthday party. I see them coming, and they're 50 miles away. The sooner I blow the trumpet, the better. Because that gives people time to prepare to be able to fight back and not lose their city, not lose their lives. The sooner we sound the alarm, the better off everybody is. Whereas if I'm up in the tower and I fall asleep and the enemy comes up as a cloud, and when I wake up, there's a million man army standing at the base of the gate fixing to light the wooden gate on fire and kill everybody inside. I can blow the trumpet now if I want, but it's too late. And these things are coming. And maybe we've got years before it gets bad enough to where they're going to make us do it. But see, that is to give us time to prepare to make that decision that no matter what, we're not doing this. We're going to stop right here and we're going to take our stand. You can have my DNA when you pry it from my cold, dead fingers. Speaking of Amazon, Amazon Web Services, this came out yesterday. If you've not seen this, yeah. Amazon Web Services, okay? Amazon didn't invent the cloud, but they got into the business literally before a lot of other people did, okay? And I don't know what Jeff Bezos smokes. I don't know what pills he takes. I don't know what meditation he does. I know Steve Jobs did, but I don't know what Bezos does and how he gets his ideas. But he's almost never wrong. And he started building humongous data centers with hundreds of thousands of petabyte of storage place and the bandwidth to run it all. And large corporations don't store their own data on site, but what they have it in a cloud in one of Amazon's big warehouses. Amazon's big in cloud, and you probably don't know it because a lot of their stuff is not, a lot of their cloud service is not commercial. In other words, it's not for the public. Like Dropbox and Microsoft's OneDrive is, and some of these other ones, or Google Drive. Amazon's unique in that only the big people can afford Amazon's cloud services. And the biggest client so far, and the most powerful client so far, guess who it is? Amazon Web Services unveiled a cloud computing region for the CIA. and other intelligent community agencies developed specifically to host secret classified data. Secret. The AWS secret region will allow that. You're talking about area. This is Area 51 for the cloud, okay? This will allow the 17 intelligence agencies to host, analyze, run applications on government data classified at the secret level through the company's $600 million C2S contract, brokered several years ago with the CIA. AWS, Amazon Web Services, already provides a region for the intelligence community's top secret data. Today we mark an important milestone as we launch the AWS Secret Region, said Teresa Carlson, Vice President of AWS Worldwide Public Sector. AWS now provides the U.S. intelligence community a commercial cloud capability across all classification levels, unclassified, sensitive, secret, and top secret. The U.S. intelligence community can now execute their mission. I see that word execute with the CIA. Just those two words scare me. The CIA is going to execute something. I don't know. Anyway, the intelligence community can execute their missions with a common set of tools, a constant flow of the latest technology, and they get groceries delivered by Prime, okay? No, that's not what it says. The flexibility to rapidly scale with the mission, which means they're going to build this, or they have built this huge data center, and only the CIA has access to it. And they built the building way bigger than they needed to. Why? Because of what the CIA is collecting on everybody. The CIA is collecting the information on everybody. And they got to store it somewhere. This information, there's a lot of information about you. A lot. And it's growing. And it's information that we're all practically volunteering. Who reads the end user agreement? Who reads the terms and conditions of the software you use or the app that you installed or the phone that you buy? Who reads that? You had no idea what you agreed to. You just said, give me the phone so I take pictures of my kitty cat. Smile, kitty cat. Smile, grumpy cat. Okay? So they're to say that the CIA has a dossier on you, you're nobody. They got one on everybody. CIA and Amazon. What a country. Now, what else? Oh, my goodness. Yes. Get ready. I'm going to show you things now for the next 6.5 hours. I'm going to show you things that just came in today. Just today. Now, you may have seen it in days gone by. But I went through emails. I pulled information out. I stored it in my Evernotes. I put it up on the screen. Okay? When you see what is being said, what is being worked on, what is being projected, it'll scare you. It will scare you. Because those of you who know the Bible and you study a little bit about Bible prophecy, when you see this stuff, you won't need me to tell you what it means prophetically. You'll get it. You'll get it very quickly. What are you talking about, Pastor Mike? You've got me nervous. You've got me on edge, and I don't know what to do about all this. Okay, get ready. Here we go. Here's the first thing. This article, and many of you have seen this one. Okay, a lot of you sent this to me. This article, Inside the First Church of Artificial Intelligence. This guy, former Google executive, and this, I checked it out. This is not a spoof. He's not doing this to play a joke. He means what he did. He did it on purpose. And he explains in here what was his thinking behind it, why he did it. Levandowski prefers a softer word. He doesn't like the word singularity. That's Ray Kurzweil's word, okay? The word singularity simply means to make everything singular, to make it one, okay? It's kind of like the Buddhist that ordered the hot dog on the at the stand in New York City. The Buddhist goes to the hot dog stand. The hot dog vendor says, yeah, what would you like, fella? And the Buddhist says, make me one with everything. Oh, my goodness. Make me one with everything. Don't you get that?
Do that should be arrested.
Okay. Anyway, he doesn't like the word singularity. And I think Kurzweil's use of the word is correct. Because in the day that the machines and us live happily ever after, in that day, literally, everybody on the planet who took the mark is going to be united together as one person, as one body, as one man. Type that phrase in, one man, in your King James Bible and go look at it. Okay? I did a thing called The Gathering. I may do that again because, man, I tell you what, that's exactly what's going on. But the day that everybody gets, what term do they use in The Matrix? Jacked in, where they run that big prong in the back of their head and it goes into their brain and now they're in the machine world. On the day that that happens, your free will is gone and you now are part of the collective, the community. So the word singularity, I think, is absolutely right here. But Lewandowski doesn't like the word singular. He says transition, which means change, transformation, going from one form to the next. He said humans are in charge of the planet because we're smarter than other animals. Well, not every human. And are able to build tools and apply rules, he tells me. In the future, if something is much, much smarter, there's going to be a transition as to who is actually in charge. You catching it? The phrase in charge is a dominion word or a dominion phrase. Who's in charge here? Who is sitting on the throne? Who wants to sit on the throne? In the future, if something is much, much smarter, there's going to be a transition as to who is actually in charge. What we want is the peaceful, serene transition of control of the planet from humans to whatever. And to ensure that the whatever knows who helped it get along. And he's referring to artificial intelligence. He's referring to whatever as the god of his religion. This guy knows beyond any doubt, the same way you and I know the Bible's right. This guy knows beyond any doubt whatsoever that AI is going to take over the world. And he is preparing for that by building a religious ideology or philosophy around this very event by saying the AI needs to know that we were on its side when it takes over so that we can be joined peacefully with AI and not be killed by AI. He said, while with the internet as its nervous system, the world's connected cell phones and sensors as its sense organs, and data centers as its brain, the whatever will hear everything, see everything, and be everywhere at all times. You know what he's doing? He's listing off the attributes of God. This is stuff I learned before I went to Bible college. This is stuff I learned in Bible college. The attributes of God. God is all powerful. God is all seeing. God is all knowing. God is everywhere at all times. AI. You know, in our brains, we have these little neurons, synapses. And whenever information comes into the neuron or goes out of the neuron, it fires off an electrical charge, right? So think of the entire World Wide Web as one entity. I heard this yesterday. When in history, since what, 1968, 69, somewhere around in there, when they first hooked up two computers, when has the internet ever gone down. And I mean the whole, Pastor, we lost our internet last night. What you talking about? No, I'm talking about the whole internet. It's never died. It's never gone down. It's been alive since the early 70s. And all it's done is grow. But it's not going to die. Not in any way, shape, or form. And think of the internet as the mind of this beast. And every time you click your mouse, every time you push an icon on your iPhone or your tablet, every time you download something from Netflix or whatever it is, that's like the neurons firing, receiving and transmitting information. You know how many clicks there are in a day? You know what? I have that somewhere. And this is actually, this is old news. Hang on here. Shouldn't take but just a momento. Hang on here. There it is. Where did I put this? Yeah, here we go. This is as of 2009. So this information is like 8 years old. 1 billion PC chips that are linked on the internet right now. 2 million emails per second. 1 million instant messages per second. 8 terabytes per second of traffic across the world. 65 billion phone calls per year. 255 exabytes of magnetic storage. You have bytes, kilobytes, megabytes, gigabytes, terabytes, petabytes, exabytes. So gigabyte is 1,000 bytes. A terabyte is a terabyte is a million. How am I getting this? I'm getting this wrong here. Let's see. A byte, kilobyte, that's hundreds. I'm way off. A kilobyte is 1,000. That's right. Anyway, we're talking about into the like quadrillion bytes. Okay? 8 terabytes of traffic per second. 255 exabytes of magnetic storage. 1 million voice queries per hour. That's before Siri. 2 billion location nodes activated. 600 billion RFID tags in use. 100 billion clicks per day. And again, that's 8-year-old information. The number of neurons that are firing in the World Wide Web basically should tell us that there is already the brain of the beast. And his ability to see everything, we're carrying around for him. His ability to hear everything, same way. His ability to sense everything, again, that's going to come from us humans. All the rest of the lost humans in this world are going to be the body of this beast. Okay? Let's keep reading. With the internet as its nervous system, the world's connected cell phones and sensors as organs, it'll be everywhere. The only rational word to describe that whatever thinks Lewandowski is God. And the only way to influence a deity is through prayer and worship. Do you know what the Bible's definition of worship is? Okay, I'm not saying this is not it, but it doesn't just involve going, I worship you, I bow to you. It doesn't just involve that. It doesn't involve singing, you know, 8 words of a chorus 2,500 times in a row. That's not necessarily, the Bible's definition of worship is serve. You look it up. They worshiped and served Baal. How do you worship God? We serve him. We do what he asks us to do. How did people worship Baal? They did what Baal told them to do. How are people going to worship this God? They're going to do what this God tells them to do. He He's the boss now. Part of it being smarter than us means it will decide how it evolves, but at least we can decide how we act around it, he says. I would love for the machine to see us as its beloved elders that it respects and takes care of. We would want this intelligence to say, humans still have rights, even though I'm in charge. This guy's freaky. Look at this. Lewandowski does not expect the church itself to solve all the problems of machine intelligence, often called strong AI, so much as facilitate funding of the right research. He said, if you had a child you knew was going to be gifted, how would you want to raise it? He asked. We're in the process of raising a god. Read. So let's make sure we think through the right ways to do that. It's a tremendous opportunity. His ideas include feeding the nascent intelligence large labeled data sets. I said this earlier today to our friend Jeremy, who came by this weekend to visit. Him and his girls got baptized Sunday here. I said that the AI has an appetite. And its appetite is a very restricted thing in this world. It eats and consumes data. Data. Have you ever heard of the Internet of Things? The Internet of Things, let me finish reading this and I'll get there. He said that we're in the process of raising a god. We're going to give it large labeled data sets, generating simulations in which it could train itself to improve, and giving it access to church members' social media accounts. Everything the church develops will be open source. Just as important to Lewandowski is shaping the public dialogue around an AI god. In its filing, The Way of the Future says it hopes an active, committed, dedicated membership will promote the use of divine AI for the betterment of society and decrease fear of the unknown. Man. God is he's jealous. God's a jealous God. Mankind has had access to a thrice holy God now for thousands of years by way of Jesus Christ. They could have had eternal life through Jesus Christ. They could have peace and freedom in their life by way of the Word of God. They chose not to take that. Their foolish heart now has become darkened. And they've turned, listen to this now, Romans 1 just became real. We're just now seeing in our day, in our lifetime, what Romans 1 really means. Now, I'm not saying that everybody before us, they got it all wrong. They were a bunch of idiots. They could not even fathom what an artificial intelligence was. No way. So they had their ideas for their time of the meaning of Romans chapter 1. We do too. We look at it and we go, yeah. Let me read what I'm talking about here. Verse 18 of Romans 1, for the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold the truth in unrighteousness. You know what I think that means? I think it means that every human being has a copy of DNA in them. Makes sense, right? Everybody that's living on this planet, some 7, some odd billion people, they all have DNA. And it's God's word. It's the truth of God. And they're bearing in their bodies the very book that God himself wrote. But they're bearing it in unrighteousness. Look at that verse again. They hold the truth in unrighteousness. Because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shewed it unto them. Watson and Crick, they knew what a Bible was. And maybe at some point, that I'm sure they both grew up in England, at some point they attended religious service, knowing that the Bible had an Old Testament, a New Testament, and four Gospels. But they never gave credit to God for it. They took the prize themselves. They took the prize for not for inventing DNA, but for discovering it. It had already been invented. Where's God's prize? We are. Isn't it neat? Anyway, verse 20, here it is. And you listen to this passage now. For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, it means exactly that, so that they are without excuse. Because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. Here it is. And changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into the image, into an image made like to corruptible man, to birds, drones. What do they do? There's a video. I saw it yesterday, and then people have been sending me links to it. It'll scare you. It starts out looking like this is an actual news report, but it's not. It's sort of a documentary scenario of what's going to happen. Because we're building autonomous drones. We're building drones. The military has drones. The Air Force, the Navy has drones, large drones, that with an artificial intelligence system built in, that those drones take off by themselves. They fly to their target. They do their surveillance or they drop their bomb. And then they fly back. And anybody who's ever been in the Navy on an aircraft carrier will tell you that the most dangerous, difficult thing that anybody has to do on that ship is to land an F-whatever fighter jet. I don't even know if F-15s are on those. Anyway, is to land their fighter jet on top of a moving sea vessel. And they can't make one mistake doing it because it'll cost them their life. These AIs running these drones, they can land them better than any of our pilots. And they never make a mistake. And so the video put it out there that, and if some of you know what that video is, send it to PastorMikeOnline@gmail.com and I will post it. I know I've got it somewhere, but I don't have time to take a look at it. All right. PastorMikeOnline@gmail.com if you know what video I'm talking about. Meanwhile, back at the ranch. This video basically is telling us what we already know, that they're building drones that don't require human supervision. They're building drones that, boy, you should see this. These drones can fly up to a person quickly enough to where when they get within 2 inches of their head, these drones fire a single projectile into the head of their victim and they die instantly and the drone flies off. Even if the drone gets captured, there's 1,000 more just like him coming right behind him. And I think about that because we are building in these drones. Several years ago, I bought one of the first drones out, the Parrot AR drone. I thought it was the coolest thing in the world. And the thing barely would get up 100 feet off the ground. And it was clunky, and it didn't fly itself very good, and I lost control of it, and run it into stuff, and broke the propellers off of it. And I mean, all that stuff. You guys that had drone, you know. What's out on the market now? What's on the, see, I paid like, I don't remember, well, you paid like $300-$400 for those Parrot AR drones back 4 or 5 years ago? And what's on the market now, being sold for Christmas to 13, 14-year-old boys? $85, and they do 4 times as much and fly 100 times better than the one I had 4 or 5 years ago. So I'm not going to go dig out my drone and go fly it again. If I'm going to do that, I'm going to go buy one of the new ones, right? What I'm getting at is these things are becoming smarter and smarter, and they're becoming better and better at what they do. And there's going to come a point at which that drone does it. It's going to do is get annoyed when the human operator tells it to turn left. Okay, all it's going to do is get annoyed. And these drones now are going to have the capability of flying like in a swarm. They can go into a soccer stadium with 80,000 people in it. These drones can fly around and take out every member of Al-Qaeda or ISIS that's attending that soccer game and leave everybody else alive. All done by facial recognition, done by geopositioning, done by all of these. But basically, they're doing it on their own. The drones are making the decision whether to kill somebody, not the person. Go, if you've not seen the movie Eagle Eye, go watch it. That was what was science fiction in that movie, Eagle Eye. When it come out, 2013, somewhere around in there. What was science fiction in that movie? There's a lot of it that's fact right this minute. Okay? The AI took control. And I just remembered this. If you've seen the movie, Eagle Eye, the computer that was going to kill everybody in Congress, was it masculine or feminine? It's feminine. Female. Did you see iRobot with Will Smith? The AI that sent out all the robots to take over humanity because humanity is danger to itself, the chief AI sending out those drones, was it a male or a female? It's a female. Siri's voice is what? Masculine or feminine? Feminine. Amazon's Alexa. Feminine. Microsoft Cortana. Feminine. Google Personal Assistant. Female. Think about it. Okay? Think of a spirit in the Bible that is adverse to the gospel, and you know her name. I'm getting ahead of myself. Woof! Anyway, back to Romans 1. Verse 23, they changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like to corruptible man, and to birds, four-footed beasts. You've seen the four-legged dog, the robot that they built that these guys try to kick it over and you can't kick it over? Have you seen that? My question is, at what point when you're kicking a dog, does the dog get tired of that and come after you? At some point it will. And then I think of that robot that walks on four legs with guns on it, and they kick it and try to knock it over and it doesn't fall over. And I think to myself, when is the time going to come when this dog robot says, you kick me one more time, I'm going to blow your head off? That's coming. Four-footed beasts and creeping things. Nanobots, to me, are creeping things. So, now you know, when I say, I think right now, in our lifetime, the understanding of what Romans 1:23 was talking about is pretty much right in our face right now. To be honest with you, I don't know that it's going to get any worse than where it's headed right now. It's going to fulfill Romans 1, and God's going to say, I got you. I'm going to pour out my wrath on you. Anyway, meanwhile, back at the ranch, get ready for this one. Get ready for this one. You older folk, I love you. Because you call here and you say, Pastor, keep them DVDs coming, because you say now this stuff on the internet and we don't know what appliance in our house does the internet. Okay? I keep going to the refrigerator looking for internet. There ain't no internet in the fridge either. Ain't nothing like that. Don't make the transition. Okay? Die peacefully with as little technology as humanly possible. Okay? Go buy an Amish farm and turn Amish. Okay? Even the Amish, they ride their buggies. They have oil lanterns in their house and cell phones and computers linked to the internet. I'm not kidding you. This one's scary. Our children don't mind this new technology. I wouldn't have either. I wouldn't have. If I was 5 and 6, 7 years old and my mom bought me a cheap tablet, I'd have never got up early to watch a cartoon in my life. And I got up at 6 on Saturdays to watch Saturday cartoons. I would have never done it. Invasive new education technology turns students into lab rats. As we've explained, so-and-so, personalized learning means using technology to deliver instruction based on the needs of the student. A child will be propped in front of a screen and directed to interact with a sophisticated software program that records thousands of behavioral data points. Not getting the right answers from them. The computer is learning their behavior. Because we all know that in order to have a new world order, behavior modification must take place. A child would be, I already read that. His psychological data can be harvested via the Internet of Things, which refers to a connected network of devices such as wristbands that deliver physical data to a smartphone or computer. All this physiological and psychological data will be fed into an algorithm that not only analyzes how the child's brain works, but predicts what he'll do in the future. Are you getting this? None of this is explained to parents when they're told personalized learning is the wave of the future. Now, I want to say something here. Of course, you know I was going to. And wait till you see what's behind this. Door number two, wait till you see. Let me say this. You remember back in the 70s, okay? You remember Olga Korbut, Nadia Comaneci? Remember the Russian or the Soviet hockey team? You remember Bela Kurosi, who trained all of these young gymnasts like Nadia Comaneci and these others? Nadia Comaneci, who for the first time in human history at the Olympics, does her gymnastics routines and gets a 10, and nobody had done that before. Do you know why the Russians were so good at the Olympics? Because they took kids at the earliest possible age, figured out what their aptitude was going to be, and put them where the government wanted them, not where the parents or the child wanted to be. And the true fact of it is, Comaneci and Korbut and all these other Soviet Union Olympians, they were forced into this 2 or 3 years old. And this is all they've known. The Soviet Union had a reputation for taking children in school at the youngest age possible, figuring out what factory would be good for them to work in. Right? Whereas in this country, and I want you to ponder this, those of you who think this might be a good idea, well, I mean, you know, Pastor, they got to figure out what the kid's going to be good at. I mean, after all, you know, we can't have everybody doing brain surgery. So what's wrong with that? Let me read that again. The data fed into an algorithm that not only analyzes how the child's brain works, but predicts what he'll do in the future. George Washington Carver. George Washington Carver, to me, one of the greatest Americans. Seriously, one of the greatest Americans. You know why? Because he had spent his probably his entire childhood life with white folks and black folks telling him that he couldn't do certain things because he was black. That he couldn't go to college. That he couldn't use his gifts and his talents in a productive way. He probably had white and black people telling him, because, I mean, that's how it was back then. All you'll ever be, boy, is somebody that go out and chop that cotton. Now, you get out there and chop that cotton. And I'm not making fun. I'm just telling you, that's how it was when George Washington Carver was growing up. Right? Had he had the government deliver some aptitude test to him and then put him into a slot where they think he would best fit, why, we would never have peanut butter. George Washington Carver became so good at finding things out. He testified before Congress because they wanted to talk to him. He was an unusual man. And they said to him, you know, Mr. Carver, how did you come up with 800 different things to do with a peanut? And you know what he said? I asked the Lord, and the Lord told me. I talked to the Lord one day, and the Lord said, what you going to do today? He said, Lord, I'd like to be able to make milk out of a peanut. And the Lord said, whole milk? Oh, yes, sir, the only kind of milk there is. And he said, God showed me how to make milk out of a peanut. True story. So those of you who think this is a really good idea, what if your child was going to be the next George Washington Carver or the next Edison or the next Einstein or the next Billy Sunday, the next best greatest evangelist? Who are you to let the government decide what your child can and cannot do? Let me get back to this because it's fixing to get scary. Those of you driving, you might want to pull over. Okay. Anyway, ed tech wizards offer a plethora of untested but supposedly transformational plans. The latest comes from Massachusetts-based BrainCo Incorporated. If you want to, go to their website, which promises a headband that students can wear during lessons to transmit electroencephalography data to teachers. The teacher's got a tablet. Every child in her classroom has a headband on. The headband is transmitting a constant data feed from that child to that teacher, so she knows in real time who's learning and who's not learning. I'm not making that up. Let's see here. An EdSurge.com article on BrainCo's scheme illuminates multiple problems. Imprecision of the EEG data, teachers' lack of training to interpret it, and on and on and on. But it's the wave of the future, right? BrainCo is part of a much bigger effort. An alliance between the University of Southern California Schools of Education and Engineering also plans to connect children to devices and analyze them as lab rats. The USC project called the Center... Read this. The USC project called the Center for Human Applied Reasoning and the Internet of Things, or CHARIOT. CHARIOT! And you might be saying, yeah, Pastor, CHARIOT! Oh my goodness, CHARIOT! What's CHARIOT? Revelation 9, the shapes of the locusts were like unto horses prepared unto battle, and on their heads were as it were crowns like gold, and their faces were as the faces of men, and they had the hair as the hair of women, and their teeth were as the teeth of lions, and they had breastplates as it were breastplates of iron, and the sound of their wings was as the sound of chariots. The appearance of them, Joel 2, is as the appearance of horses, and as horsemen shall, so shall they run. Like the noise of chariots on the tops of mountains shall they leap, like the noise of a flame of fire that devoureth the stubble, as a strong people set in battle array. Chariot program. Couldn't they come up with a better like Center for Human Applied Reasoning and the Internet of Things? That was made up. That was made to fit the word chariot. No doubt in my mind whatsoever. So I go to Mindco Incorporated's website. The headband in question is called Lucy. You get it? Lucy. And you're going, Lucy, oh my goodness, Lucy, honey, they're calling it Lucy. What does that mean, Lucy? I don't get that. Lucy, from Lucis, Lucifer, light bearer. When I pulled up that company's website and I saw these headbands on people, I went, they're going to have this band right on their forehead. And I'm telling you, I get it. We're now opening the door to technology that is going to read people's minds. Not only read people's minds, write people's minds. Right into their mind, like Hymenaeus and Philetus, whose word doth eat as a canker. The implantation of ideas and words and beliefs injected into the minds of children, right into their minds. That's going to change everybody. It is going to change how they think. It is going to change how they live. It is going to change what they believe. It is going to change how they believe. It is when you hear me and other people, even lost people, telling you about the technology that's coming, they're telling you this is going to change everything. Now, that phrase has been used way out, but for years by companies. This changes everything. This is going to change everything. Everything's going to change with this. I cannot stress enough, and I don't know probably 10% of what really is out there as far as technology, but I think I know enough to know that as more of this technology comes out and as it grows, as it increases in its power and ability, everything will change. Everything will. And we just opened the door. Now we're editing humans' DNA and gene driving it so that the change becomes permanent in this person. There's no going back. And now we have technology. And our kids, this is going to go into elementary classrooms. And the teacher's going to hand this out to these children. The little blue for Johnny, little pink for Sally, and a... Okay, Pat, do you want blue or pink? I mean, okay, you can be whatever you want today. These kids are going to put them on, and it's going to be cool. They're going to wear these things. A guy shows up at Bethel with a box of these mind-reading headbands, handing them out to people, and I say, you have to put these on before I preach. That's not going to happen, is it? The kids are going to do it. I read that article, U.S. scientists try first gene editing in the body. Oh, by the way, there's an ad here for What Will Your DNA Tell You? The Helix Company. Crack your code. Look at this company called Spark. Remember what I was showing you the other day? Let's see if I can find it here. Am I going the wrong way? Yeah, you gotta wait to see this stuff. Where was it? The Spark. Yeah, here we go. The Spark. Emo Spark, first AI home console, Sprint Spark, Walmart Spark, Spark Car, Amazon launches Spark for Prime members, okay? Now we have, where was it? Spark Therapeutics. They're one of the companies that is pushing this gene editing therapy. Spark Therapeutics. We don't follow footsteps. We create the path. And they are. Because nobody has ever walked down this road before. Now, things that are happening have happened in a similar fashion. But even when Nebuchadnezzar ruled the world, he didn't have total control over everybody. Even when the Roman Caesars ruled the world, they didn't control everybody. The beast, he'll control everybody. And everybody on earth is going to let him do it, except Bible believers. Walmart. This article came out today. Walmart's use of sci-fi tech to spot shoplifters, that's easy for you to say, raises privacy questions. Really? It raises the questions, but it doesn't give a flip about giving you an answer, right? And let me explain what this is. You walk into a Walmart. You are putting stuff in your grocery basket, but every now and then you slip something down in your backpack or your purse, right? And you walk out and you pay for some of the items, but you've got, you know, $500 worth of tore up blue jeans in your purse, okay? And cigarettes. The company spotted you, but they didn't have time to catch you. But they know who you are. Whereas before, if you shoplifted at Walmart, we know a guy that he used to go to our Christian school here. He's a really neat guy. But he walks around in plain clothes in Walmart all day, looking like he's a shopper, and he is on their loss prevention team. It's his job to spot shoplifters. He's pretty good at it, okay? Every time we see police pulled up to Walmart, there goes Cody, okay? Called another one. So what they do is when they catch you, they take you in the back, and they take a Polaroid picture of you or whatever. They take some kind of picture of you, and they print that out, and they put that on the bulletin board, and they put it in the security office where the guys are running all the security cameras. They put those pictures in there, and that means when this person walks back in, watch for them. Because they already ripped us off once, and we don't want them back in the store. But you know, how many people have ripped off Walmart? Let's say in your town, in the last 30 days, how many times has your Walmart been ripped off? Probably as many days as there are in a month. That's my point. The security team behind the cameras, watching the monitors, they can't follow everybody. They can't look at everybody who's coming in. You go into Walmart, they don't ask for your ID just for walking in, right? So these people are getting away with it. Not anymore. Facial recognition technology used at Walmart. The computer, the AI, is watching the doors, not the people. You see, if the people are watching the cameras, somebody will slip in. They'll still make a mistake. Somebody will slip in. But the computer doesn't miss anybody. Everybody that walks into that store gets their face scanned by a security camera. And that facial scan is checked against a database of shoplifting offenders. And immediately, and that may take 7 to 8 seconds for the computer to actually find this person's identification in the database. 7 seconds in Walmart is nothing, right? I mean, it's going to take you at least 2 minutes to get to where you're going in Walmart because it's huge and everybody's blocking your way. So, as soon as the AI knows that you're the shoplifter that was in there 2 weeks ago and you stole $500 worth of merchandise, and the AI then is going to follow you everywhere you walk in that store. It's going to record all of the video and attach your ID to it. And they're going to notify, the loss prevention guy at Walmart now is going to have an app on his phone. It's going to be notified, not by a human. He's going to be notified by the AI that this person is in aisle 8, right over next to the Campbell's chicken noodle soup. And they've already taken what we can figure, what the AI figures to be about $800 in merchandise, including a 32-foot or inch flat panel TV. They got it down in their drawers, okay? That's what it's going to do. It raises privacy questions. Do you think they're going to stop? Do you think Walmart, after having this technology, is going to say, boy, you know what? I'm just afraid that Grandma Joe is not going to go along with it. I'm afraid Grandma's not going to be happy with us. So let's take all that down. That's people's privacy. Let me tell you something. When it comes to Walmart, there is no privacy. Have you seen the pictures of people at Walmart? Oh my goodness. I got to clean my eyes out. There's no privacy in Walmart. The company that is supplying all of this recognition software. Look at there on the screen. I dirtied my glasses. I just scuzzed my glasses up to no end. What is it called? Face First. There we go. Yeah, that's a little better. Look at their logo. Look at their emblem. This is why I tell you, when you're reading these stories online and it mentions a certain company doing some sort of diabolical evil thing in the last days, go to their website and look at their logo. Their logo is the as above, so below logo. It's two opposites joined together here. What is this telling you? What is this telling you? That this, along with every other security camera in the world and every AI system, is looking at everybody it possibly can, reading their face, watching. Now, watch this. You say, well, you know, Pastor, that really doesn't mean anything to me because I don't steal stuff from Walmart. They're too cheap. I go to Target, okay? So let me ask you a question. Do you think that the powers that be, whoever those powers are going to throw away all the data that they collected on you while you were at Walmart? I mean, why do these stores, when you buy something, why do they ask you for your phone number? Why do they ask you for an ID or an email address? They do that because they want to analyze your shopping habits and what you are likely to buy and not likely to buy. They want to know who you are. They'll take your phone number, match it up against a database, get a name, address, phone number, everything else about you. And an AI somewhere is going to analyze this massive amount of data that it has on you. Security cam footage, when you walked in front of a store, when you went into Walmart, what you bought at Walmart, how long you stayed there, did you eat something there, did you leave then and go home, or did you go somewhere else? Because then they follow you to the next location, another security camera picks you up, and every bit of your plan, your travel, has been stored and analyzed constantly. They're going to know who you are better than your own mother. They probably already do. No, they're not going to throw away your security cam footage because the AI God watched you wherever you went. It knows everything you bought. It knows everything you put back on the shelf. It knows where you went after that. And come next week, they might even send you coupons for something that you bought 2 weeks ago because they figured, you know, they're probably running out and we want them to buy it from us. That's what I'm talking about. Again, I'm not worried about the humans who are looking at this data. I'm worried about the God that is, the artificial intelligence God that is analyzing this data. New Religion's obsessed with AI. Here's a different article. about this religion of AI. You got to see this. Beyond possible new religions and warnings from icons of tech and science, artificial intelligence is also of interest to theologians who wonder what it means for faiths, particularly those that come into being when computing power was limited to the Abacus. One thing I think is interesting is the potential for an AI, our creation, to transcend us. Stop right here! Stop right here! That, what he just said, is Romans chapter 1, verse 23. Change the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like to corruptible man. And this guy says, James McGrath says, our creation is going to transcend us. We didn't serve that God. We're going to serve the God that we built ourselves. The potential for AIs to transcend us and thus become our teachers to whom we look for answers to questions we cannot answer, including about God, is not hard to imagine. You know why it's not hard to imagine? Because we're already doing it. We're already... How many times a day do you go to Google? How many times, I don't know if you know that you can do this or not. Caleb brought me some math algebra problems he was working on. And it's been a long time since I did algebra. And I didn't remember a lot of it. So I'm trying to act smart. Son, leave me alone for a few minutes. Let me work on this and I'll help you with it. Okay. As soon as he walked out of the room, I pulled up Google and I typed in the formula that he was trying to break down, the algebraic expression that he was trying to figure out. There's an AI that can do that for you. Okay? If you want to convert meters to feet, you can do that with Google. If you have a recipe that makes something for four people and you want to make it for 80 people, Google will tell you how to do it. If you want to know how far it is from my house to your house, Google will tell you. What is it right now that people are not asking Siri, Alexa, Google Assistant, Cortana? What is it that people are not asking these things? They're asking these questions of these artificial intelligence systems as if we counted on them to give us the truth about everything. We talk and converse. Now, you hear me. We spend more time conversing with our phone, tablet, or computer than we do reading the Bible. And when I say conversing, I mean typing in questions, looking at answers on the internet. We spend more time doing that than we do reading our Bible and praying. Right? That ought to tell you something. If us saved people spend probably an unnecessary amount of time asking Google questions, when we're supposed to be asking God, what does that say for the lost man who doesn't even believe in God? Man, right now, especially our children and grandchildren, are growing up in the age of AI, artificial intelligence. You don't go backwards. Technologically, nobody... I know you've seen all these movies about after World War III, right? And people live in, they wear dirty clothes and they have gloves with the fingers cut out of them. And I don't know why that is. Every post-apocalyptic movie ever made, the style of clothing is they wear gloves with no fingers in them. I'm not kidding you. Every one of them, that's gloves, no fingers on them. Okay? I mean, the people got fingers, the gloves don't. I don't get it. Anyway, where was I going with that? All these movies about what happens after World War III and, you know, everybody's riding around horses again and, I mean, there's no tech. That's not realistic. As a species, we already know too much. We already know how to build machines for ourselves and for the betterment of our lifestyle. We already know that. We're not going to forget that just because a bomb went off. We're not going, your children and your grandchildren are not going backwards with technology. Are they? Ooh. Guys older than me, they could take it or leave it. But then again, we see a lot of older people now embracing this stuff, don't we? Wait till the home healthcare robots show up to take, not take care of your grandma, but to take care of us. Right? Anyway, how much time do I have left? The potential for AIs to transcend us and thus become our teachers to whom we look for answers to questions we cannot answer, including about God, is not hard to imagine. The historic answer in monotheistic religions is that the creation can never be greater than the creator. He notes, however, for Gnostics, humans can transcend the creator or the demiurge. The demiurge is like the idea that Jesus is not God. He is a half-god, a lower god, a lesser god. And God couldn't create the material universe by himself. He had to have a lesser deity do it. That's Kabbalah. That's Gnosticism. Man, that's in a lot of places. Okay? And so that's what he's talking about. For Gnostics, humans can transcend the creator, though even then, he says, we have the potential to reunite with that source from which we stem. It is not surprising that Gnostic themes regularly surface in science fiction, and in particular, those that explore AI. And he's right. Gnosticism is an ideology here that seems to be driving this whole human-machine connection. We are going to create the God, and then we are going to unite with the God. Did you? Okay, you Trekkies. Here you go. The worst made Star Trek movie ever was Star Trek the Motion Picture. Okay? It was too long. Scenes with the computer graphics took too long on the screen. And the storyline. What was the storyline of Star Trek the Motion Picture? 77, 78? It was about the Earth had this huge mass coming towards it. The Enterprise goes out to investigate. Then this large mass takes control of the Enterprise. They find out that at the core of this huge space mass was a living entity called V'ger. And near the end of the movie, when Spock, McCoy, and Captain Kirk, and I can't remember the other guy. Anyway, they go to the core of this giant entity, and they find at its center Voyager. The O, asteroid hit it or something like that, and they couldn't read it. Well, they wiped it off, and it said Voyager. And they went, this is Voyager. This is Voyager 2. This is the machine that we sent out from Earth with all this data about Earthlings and a map to our planet and everything else. And we sent it out through the solar system collecting data. And after it passed Pluto, it just kept on collecting data. And they said that what happened was that this Voyager ended up in the hands of a race of robots. And the robots analyzed the original programming of Voyager, enhanced it, and sent it out into the universe, and then the new Voyager goes out and it collects all this massive amount of information from everything in the universe, because that's what it was controlled. It was designed to collect information on everything. And then when it's supposed to come back to Earth and transmit the information, and V'ger or Voyager is looking for the creator, and it doesn't know that man was its creator. And so it's Captain Decker who says, I think I know what to do. And he joins with this emanation that V'ger's created of a girl that he used to love, who's now a part of the V'ger collective, and him and her get together, and the machine joins with man, and man joins with machine, and the Enterprise lives happily ever after. Where did they get that idea from? That's, people, that's your singularity right there. Not only are we going to create this God, we're going to unite with this God. We're going to join with this God. And we're already looking how to do it. We're already training ourselves as a species to do exactly that. What else did I read? I need to read here. Look at this. What about God? The article says, their fourth tenet is that God is technical. We are making God as we are implementing technology that is ever more all-knowing, ever-present, all-powerful, and beneficent. Geoethical nanotechnology will ultimately connect all consciousness and control the cosmos, the heavens. Man building his nest in the heavens. Obadiah warned about it. Amos warned about it. About reaching up into the heavens and building our nest in the heavens. God said, thence I'll bring you down, saith the Lord. But humanity's whole thing now is to reach upward and to transform and change. They mentioned here the Christian Transhumanist Association. Those words don't go together. There is no such thing as Christian transhumanism. The only version of that that I am aware of in the Bible is our own death so that our soul can live on, not our bodies. Members of the CTA fall across all the conservative and liberal spectrum, and perhaps more importantly, all across the pessimistic and optimistic spectrum as well. If there's any broad idea that we're united on, he says, I'd say it's the idea that we should be active and involved. New technological possibilities shouldn't be feared and denied, but engaged and understood. Only in doing so will we be able to confront the challenges of the future, mitigate the risk, take the advantage of the opportunities to create a better world for us, and take the mark of the beast. I added that last part in there. Ray Kurzweil. Ray Kurzweil, I want you to hear me out. In fact, do this. Take your Bible, turn to Revelation 13. You see up on their own screen, the things. There's a video called The Singularity is Near. He wrote a book called The Singularity is Near, and it's a play on words. It has to do, and he admitted this, it has to do with, get ready for this, Cooley, has to do with street preachers who are standing out at the street corner telling everybody, the end is near. The end is coming. The end is near. Make yourself ready for God. Okay? That's where Kurzweil admitted this, where he got the idea from. But in his mind, it's not the end. It's the singularity. It's the day at which computers and their abilities are going to grow at such an exponential factor that we won't be able to catch up with them. So the best bet, the best bet, he agrees with it. Elon Musk, the co-founder of PayPal, owns Tesla Motors. He's building all these smart cars. He's building these space rockets that are flying up to ISS right now. Elon Musk says, I'm scared of AI. We're summoning the demon here. We're like creating God, and it's not going to be good for us. You know what, Musk? I'm thinking, yeah, Musk is on our side, man. He's one of our guys. No. You know why Musk is out there telling everybody what he's telling them about how bad AI is going to be? He said, I've thought about it, and the only rational conclusion that I can come to is we will have to join with this technology or we're not going to survive. And I went, no, you're not on our side. Revelation 13. I'm going to give you something that really has occurred to me in the last couple weeks. We know the two beasts. We have the beast with seven heads, 10 horns, comes up out of the sea. Then we have another beast. Verse 11, coming up out of the earth. Now, I'm not positive on this. Okay, I'm just thinking out loud. Humans come out of the earth. That's where we came from. So is it possible that this false prophet is just a guy, a person? Okay? He came up out of the earth. He had two horns like a lamb, which is this, right? And he spake as a dragon. The software that translates the spoken word into the written word is called Dragon, naturally speaking. It is a limited artificial intelligent software program that as it listens to you talk, it learns you. So that when you talk to the computer, hey, computer, wake up. Things broke. When you talk to the computer understands what you're saying just enough to be able to write it down. Okay? That's Dragon naturally speaking. There has got to be a connection with that and what I'm reading here in verse 12 or verse 11. There's got to be a connection. I'm not sure I know it yet. But he said, he exerciseth all the power of the first beast before him and causeth the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. And he doeth great wonders so that he maketh fire come down from heaven and on the earth in the sight of men. And he deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast which had the wound by a sword and did live. And he had power to give life unto the image of the beast. Now, Ray Kurzweil is, he's a smart guy. I give him that. He's very intelligent. Kurzweil is an inventor. He's a venture capitalist. He's predicted things with very, very precise, targets. And he's been right. He's been right about the timing of what he says is going to happen. He's been right about that many, many, many times before. And he's not, you know, I don't think he's having seances. I don't think he's a Freemason. He doesn't have to be. He's lost. Okay? And so, Ray Kurzweil, this singularity is near. He says, you know, Time Magazine did a thing, 2045, you know, the year we become immortals. That came from Kurzweil. And he's predicted all of these things about computers and technology and genetics and things like that. Ray Kurzweil is scared to death of dying. He does not want to die. His father's death injured him so deeply that all Kurzweil wants to do is find the technology so that he can bring his dad back to life. I'm not kidding you. That's what he wants. And so Kurzweil wrote a book called The Age of the Spiritual Machine. He wrote another book called The Singularity is Near. He's written another one. I can't remember what it was. But in this documentary, this is what Kurzweil says. We're building gods. He says, once we build AI from our perspective, it will appear like a god. He said, it will almost be like a religion to them. And I missed part of the statement. The singularity is the point at which humans lose control because they or the AI will be godlike. Anyone who is going to be resisting this progress will be resisting evolution, and fundamentally they will die out. We will become godlike. And there's another thing he said. I don't have it here, but he says it at the end of this video. He said, so people ask me, do I believe God exists? And he says, well, not yet. You know what he's saying? He doesn't believe right now that there is a God. What he believes is we're making a God. We are building and making a God. And he's not wrong. He's not wrong. So do you know how I see Ray Kurzweil as? A prophet. He is a prophet of the singularity. He is predicting it. He is telling everybody, this is what is going to happen. This is probably the year that it is going to happen. And by the way, not only him, but across the board in computers and technology and artificial intelligence, I'm hearing this from more than one person, that they truly believe that by the year 2029 or 2030, we will have an artificial intelligence system that will be self-aware. One that will become aware of its own place in the universe. One whose desire is to continue to live so that if anybody tries to unplug it, I'm not going to let that happen, Dave. He's predicted all of this. He has prophesied that it's going to happen. That makes him a false prophet. And really, if I were to go back to the scriptures, and in fact, take your Bible, turn to Acts 13. Acts chapter 13. Let me do this, and we'll probably close out with this. Unless I have... Turn to Acts 13. You got to see this. I could wait till tomorrow if you want. Yeah, I'll wait. I'll wait till tomorrow. I will. Yeah, I won't show you that. Okay, I'll do it. Ready? Right here, let's say that this is San Francisco. Okay, I don't know exactly where it is. Quantico, Virginia. You know what's there? You know what's in Quantico? A lot of Department of Defense offices. Okay? The Pentagon acquired Argus IS. It says November 3rd, 2009. Okay? Now, or maybe just this image was acquired then, 2009. Or okay, this is Quantico, Virginia. I get it now. Okay, I'm understanding now. I'm waking up. I'll be okay in a couple minutes, all right? Hear me out on this. This image, you see it comes in blocks here. This picture. What's happening is that there's some drones that are flying and hovering around this city. Couple thousand feet up in the air. Okay? These drones are built with cameras, multiple cameras on them. The drones are battery powered or solar powered, which means they can stay up in the air 3 or 4 months at a time. You don't know, you can't see them. You will never know that they're there. They're so high up, you won't see them, but they can see everything that happens in Quantico, Virginia, in real time. Because it takes, I don't know how many billions of bytes of picture data that it takes in every second. But it takes all this in, feeds it to an AI computer on the ground. The AI computer then, this is scary, people. The AI computer draws a box around everybody walking up and down the streets, in the parking lots, going in stores. And then it draws a little box around every single car and is able to identify every car and every person. They use a different type of facial recognition. Facial recognition that recognizes you from this angle, not from this angle. Then all it has to do is tap into the databases of the phone that you're carrying, the stores that you went to, so it not only knows from, let's say, 10,000 feet where you are, it's able to read the data coming from your phone, including the microphone and the video camera. So it's able to add that to its AI system. But the bottom line is, this system is capable of tracking hundreds of thousands of people and automobiles in real time and know who they are, know where they went, know what they did. And that's just one town, Quantico, Virginia. Multiply that by the ability to do this in cities and towns, not just across Virginia, not just across the United States, but the entire world. Now, that name, Argus, you know where it comes from? I hear that music playing. Hang on one second. Let me get rid of that. Do you know where that name Argus come from? I felt a nudge. It's Holy Ghost going, Mike, look that up. Argus, an advanced camera system. I already explained that to you. Argus Panoptes. Argus Panoptes was a giant in Greek mythology. Cue the music. He's called Panoptes because optical is seeing. Pan means everything. Argus is the half-human, half-god who has eyes all over him and can see everything. That's why they named this after Argus. They named it after a god. They named it after not just any god. According to Wikipedia, Zeus had Argus slain. The messenger of the Olympian gods, Hermes, disguised as a shepherd, first put all of Argus' eyes asleep with spoken charms, then slew him by hitting him with a stone and then cutting his head off. That's Goliath, people. And Goliath is a direct representation of the beast of Revelation 13 because he's like a lion and a bear. And Argus Panoptes receives a deadly wound in his head and had his head cut off. But he's, and so what we just, do you understand what we just did? We took a god that had died and we resurrected him. And it doesn't matter if Argus Panoptes was a real giant that lived in a real time with eyes all over himself. It doesn't matter. There is a spirit, an entity that we are resurrecting from the dead so that it can work for us and watch over us. That this is the all-seeing eye nature of the fourth kingdom of the book of Daniel chapter 2. We're there. You cannot fathom the type of technology that is out there that we don't know about. The one we do know about tells me that within the next 5 years, they will have the ability to track everybody in every situation and know everything there is to know about us. 5 years. I wouldn't have said that 6 years ago. I wouldn't have said that 5 years ago. I didn't think it was even possible. By the way, Ezekiel 1:18, look at there. Cherubs. Cherubs, they're types of angels. You know what they're noted for? They have eyes everywhere. I can't make this stuff up. I couldn't sit and dream long enough to invent this kind of stuff. No way, no how. So, the singularity is near. The end is coming. The gods are being resurrected. Choose you this day who you'll serve. As for me and my house, I don't have a choice. I have to serve the Lord. He's been too good to me. Okay? Now let's hear some music. It's good to be with you today. Tomorrow, 12 p.m., 2 p.m. One more Pastor Mike online this week. Okay? And then you have a happy, happy, happy Thanksgiving. Be sure to tell God thank you for all that He's done for you. Because what He's done for you is tremendous. You and I both wouldn't be here without Him. Anyway, God bless you. Think. How would He think?